Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Doug Tribune. From South Boston to Dudley Square, Boston is in the middle of rapid change.
Construction cranes now rise over much of the city, and after decades of people leaving Boston, the population is now growing. And over the next two decades, it's expected to expand by more than 15% to more than 700,000 residents.
And that's why Mayor Marty Walsh says it's time for a new master plan for Boston, the first in 50 years. He's calling it Imagine Boston 2030, which will lay out a blueprint for the future of housing, transportation, climate action, health, arts and culture, and economic development.
In a moment, we're going to hear from two urban planning experts about the city's future, and we'll take your calls on what you'd like Boston to look like 15 years from now and beyond. How do we plan for the future? What should Boston focus on? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. But first, let's hear briefly from Mayor Marty Walsh, who spoke to us earlier today about Imagine Boston 2030.
I think the risk of not doing it is losing opportunity. We kind of, in Boston, wait for the next hot growth area. And I think by doing this now, it allows opportunities in every neighborhood. We saw in the Dudley area years and years of not neglect, but not growth. The Ferdinand Building goes online, and all of a sudden now there's real interest and involvement in that area as far as economic development. And I think that there are parts of our city that could use an infusion of imagination. For Boston to sustain what we have, we have to be innovative and look to the future and see how we do that. How do we stay sustainable?
So Imagine Boston 2030 calls for planning in housing, transportation, climate action, health, the arts and culture, economic development, to name most of them. And I know this is just the start of a process and you want the public to be involved, but give me a snapshot. What's a big idea that you'd like to see come to fruition by 2030?
I think that's the point of this, seeing what the big ideas out there are. We have a lot in those areas that you mentioned. We have a lot going on in those now. We have planning going on in each of those areas now. When this design plan is done and say, let's fast forward 20 years, I think we want to see an equitable city for everyone or an opportunity for everyone to be successful. When it comes to education, we have world-class college universities. We want to have world-class education for our grammar in high school. So it's really about how do we get to where we need to go and let people involve.
Mr. Mayor, one of the big ways the city's going to change over the next couple of decades, according to your administration, is the population is going to increase by about 15% to more than 700,000 people. What kind of opportunities does that offer?
In order to continue growth in population, we need to make sure that we continue opportunities around job creation and also housing. And that's just going to help us grow as a city. We're going to have a plan on how we grow and in what areas we grow.
Let me ask you about housing, because, of course, affordability is a big concern for many people. There's a report from Northeastern University's Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy, which noted that more than one in four renters devote half their salaries for housing costs. Rents are at an all-time high. You've called for building 53,000 more housing units by 2030. Can Boston build its way out of this problem, or does something else have to happen?
No, I think in some cases we can build our way and create more housing units, and I think that's an important piece. You know, it's hard. You can't stop inflation. You can't stop people trying to make money on their properties. You can't do that. I mean, we can try it, but I think by creating more of a supply will be helpful here in the city and will help stabilize the cost in some areas. I don't think you'll ever see it reduced, the cost reduced, unless you have a bad down economy. But certainly I think that the fact that we have some significant growth here is going to be helpful as well.
How does Imagine Boston 2030 dovetail with your desire to have the city host the Summer Olympics in 2024? Are they related in any way or completely separate efforts?
No, they're somewhat related. I mean, they're definitely related to a point. What Imagine Boston will do for us is help us understand, for example, growth areas. The Olympics are a piece of the future of our city, but I think Imagine Boston is far bigger than the Olympics.
Finally, Mr. Mayor, how long will this take? When do you expect to have a master plan in place?
It's about a year and a half, two-year process from start to finish. And then as our plan moves forward, we'll be updating it and changing it and moving it as we move along. In 1965, they did a master plan, and that was it. It went on the shelves. This won't go on the shelves. This is constantly going to be changing and evolving.
All right, so an evolving master plan. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh talking there about Imagine Boston 2030, the city's first master plan since 1965. Mayor Walsh, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And to talk more about the plan and to talk more about what Boston should look like 15 years from now and beyond, we're joined by Jerome Smith. He's Boston's Chief of Civic Engagement. And Jerome Smith, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Mark Drayson, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Mark, good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Great to be here.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you want Boston to look like in 15 years? What's important to you? It's a long list that the mayor was talking about. It focuses on housing, transportation, climate action, health, arts and culture, economic development. Where are your priorities? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Mark Drayson, I'd love to start with you. What do you think about this idea, a blueprint for Boston, sort of looking out 15 years? How important is this?
Well, I think it's very important, Anthony, and I'm thrilled at the recommendations that the mayor has made here. I've lived in the city every day of my life. I was 9 years old when the last plan was done, and so it's about time. We are lucky to be a growing city. People want to move here. Companies want to locate here. Young people increasingly want to stay here after school. And the wonderful thing about that is it creates opportunity in all of our neighborhoods. It creates the opportunity even to make a few new neighborhoods. But the difficult thing is if you don't plan for it, if you don't say we'd like this here and that there, we need to particularly serve these people. Here's how the transportation system is going to keep up with growth. If you don't say these things, then the process is determined mainly by developers who come in on a parcel-by-parcel basis, and they all have ideas for what they want to do to maximize profit on that parcel. And we feel the public ought to have a say in this as well. Mm. And laying out priorities, trying to figure out where the challenges are, balancing things that might lead you in different directions. That's all a very sensible way to make sure you get the future you want.
So the danger of doing nothing then is to leave too much power in too few hands, it sounds like you're saying.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think you also have to realize that the infrastructure of the city has to build along with the development of new homes and jobs. I think I came here today from a big hearing on Beacon Hill on the MBTA. The MBTA is really the lifeblood of the city. Hmm. We have to plan for the future of the transit system while we're growing more jobs and more homes.
Yeah. Now, Jerome, I'd love to come to you and jump off of what Mark was talking about, but as Chief of Civic Engagement, how do you ensure that a variety of residents, that a variety of constituencies, everybody sort of gets involved in this plan and has a say?
Yeah. So one of the fundamental things is that we actually do this from the ground up. And, typically what we've heard, Mayor Walsh has heard, is that the way we did things in the past is things would normally be pre-baked over in City Hall or one of the departments and then brought out to the community for them to say yes or no and vote up or down. And we wanted to take a different way of doing this. So we've decided, fundamentally we are going to do a baseline report. The baseline process will be, all the citywide plans, what we're doing, what's the current snapshot, demographics, economic trends, opportunities across the gambit. And we're going to pull all this together, and then we're going to go out and talk to the residents. And, on the website that we have right now, imagine.boston.gov, is where you get to tell us how you want to engage. Do you want to use Twitter? Do you want to use social media? Do you want charrettes? Do you want video conferencing? We are open to any sort of way that residents want to interact with their government in order to have this be a very holistic, open process where the residents are actually driving what they see the future of Boston as in 2030.
Okay, I want to mention the name of that website again. It's imagine.boston.gov. So people can go there, they can read about imagining this sort of future Boston and chime in any way that they want. Interesting, Mark Drayson, to think about how this might have been done the last time back in 1965. Of course, there was nothing like imagine.boston.gov. So how did that plan work?
Well, planning processes tended to be, more sort of map-oriented, some green eye shades. There would be meetings, but they were generally just meetings, from like 7 o'clock at night to 8:30 at night, and some people came and some people didn't. And like most meetings that we've all been in, the people who are comfortable talking, they get most of the say. At MAPC, my agency, where we do master plans for a lot of communities and more limited plans as well, there are whole new techniques these days. We have online gaming. I don't mean gambling, but online games that we produce that individuals, particularly young people, can participate in over 1, 2, even 3 weeks' time. And then all that information is gathered together so you get the impressions of 100 people over a period of time. Instead of these long, boring meetings with presentations, we do open houses where you can walk around from one display to the other, one on housing, one on roads, one on parks, and give your impressions by filling out a survey or by doing something on video. And then all of this can be gathered together. In that way, you might be there for 3 hours, have 300 people walk through, and you get something from all of them. So it's a kind of a brave new world in planning these days. And the great thing is you can get a lot better perspective on what the people really think, and you can bring that to bear in putting your plans together and your priorities for spending.
You know, one question I want to ask, and I'll ask you both, but I'll start with you, Jerome Smith, and that is there a danger at all in not focusing this? In other words, when I look at what Imagine Boston 2030 wants to focus on, it basically wants to focus on everything that cities need to focus on: housing, transportation, climate, action, health, arts and culture, economic development. I mean, shouldn't City Hall say, look, you know, we've got a housing problem here. We've got an affordability problem. We've got, you know, one of the widest income disparities in the country. Here are three priorities. Let's really focus on these things.
Well, I get that, but you have to also realize that the nature of the city is that we have to address all of these issues.
Yeah.
You can't just prioritize three and say that's a master plan for the whole city. You have to actually look at everything that affects the residents' lives in the city of Boston and the way that the city is going to grow. It's a, you know, a living creature in and of itself. So we need to take all these things in pieces. So the housing report has already been done. This will be tied into the master plan. Go Boston 2030 is the transportation plan that's going on right now. That will feed into this master plan. Arts and culture is kicking off Create Boston, which is theirs. So you kind of have to look at this as, you know, the master plan is the center. And all these other current plans that are currently going on are the spokes that are feeding into the plan. So it is something that can actually be, you know, workable, and something that can actually produce, you know, a real good report. And, you know, to get back to Mark's point is that, you know, when you bring this out, we will have a framework. You know, and that's what the baseline part is. We're going to have a framework that we go out and we're going to ask the residents. So will we get some things that are kind of outside of the framework? Yes, we will. And, you know, maybe it's something that we didn't think about. You know, we're going to reach out to youth. You know, a nine-year-old in one of the neighborhoods who's attending one of the Boston Public Schools will be 24 when Boston is 400 years old. So that's a major difference. So what does that nine-year-old envision in there, you know, when you ask them what Boston 2030 is going to be? So it's going to be an interesting conversation, and I don't think that we should be scared to hesitate to reach out to residents and get some of these ideas.
Well, let's have that conversation now. We want to encourage listeners to chime in here. We want to hear from you. What do you want Boston to look like in 15 years? What are your priorities? Join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let's go to Stephanie, who's calling from Dover. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern is, with the talk of economic development, et cetera, that Boston might possibly start taking on the look of other major cities. I recently moved here from the West Coast. One of the big draws for me was that Boston looks unique, just physically looks unique. You don't see a lot of chain stores. I like the smaller businesses, the boutiques and things like that. And my concern is that maybe these entrepreneurs and these smaller business owners are going to get elbowed aside with the big names coming in. And I think that there needs to be some kind of focus to ensure that these small business owners, you know, have a foothold and maintain their foothold, and that Boston is able through that to kind of maintain its unique look.
Stephanie, it's a great point you put on the table. Mark Drayson, I'll start with you. Do you want to respond to Stephanie? I mean, do you think her concern is valid?
Oh, it's a good concern, absolutely. And again, you know, it's wonderful for me to hear, for someone who's moved here from the West Coast, how beautiful they think Boston is.
Yeah.
That's exactly why we have to do the planning process.
Yeah.
If you deal with each development proposal, each parcel, one at a time, then you'll never have the big picture of how the Fenway can keep looking like the Fenway, or how my neighborhood, Roslindale, can keep looking like Roslindale. If you plan sort of from 10,000 feet, you can say, well, this has to stay the way it is. This has to change a little, but maybe not over three stories tall. This is an area where substantial additional density would be fine because it doesn't detract from the rest of the look and feel of the community. That's what the planning process is about. Mm. It shouldn't just be about maximizing tax revenue and cramming as many people in as possible. It's about growing the city while maintaining the incredible natural and physical and historical legacies that make this place so great.
Yeah, you know, when I hear Stephanie talking, I mean, one of the things that comes to my mind is the South Boston waterfront area. I mean, it's very exciting. It's a part of the city that's growing. There are cranes everywhere. But I'm not sure it's a part of the city that is walkable, that sort of has that kind of Boston neighborhood feel. And I'm wondering if a process like this would help mitigate that or avoid that from happening again.
Well, you got to think about the waterfront. It was done by what we had talked about. It was a process where it was kind of project by project, neighborhood by neighborhood. And So I think an overall city plan will have a discussion about what do we want to see, how we want to see green space. Do we want to have more access to the harbor? How do we want to have walkable streets? So these are things that if we had an overall arching plan in the city, we could address some of the things and that feel that we're hearing about some people's responses to the Seaport. And to get back to her point, the city is growing, and with or without this plan, the city is in fact going to grow. And so it's because of that we have an unusual opportunity to kind of reimagine things. And the challenge for us today is that how do we harness this energy so that we do exactly that? We preserve wisely, we enhance equitably, and we grow intelligently. These are kind of the core three pieces that are going to happen in this plan to make sure that we do have a character. It is kind of like the Boston brand, and how do we preserve that while we're also growing and suiting the needs?
Let's go to Jay, who's calling from Roxbury. Jay, you're on the air.
Yes, Roxbury has experienced rug after rug being pulled from under us. I go all the way back 70 years in Boston, most of my life in Roxbury. What I'm concerned about this lack of cause and effect. Now, if there's no growth, usually the cause of no growth nationally is neglect.
Right.
And that's what, where it's coming from. And, we had a neighborhood, Lower Roxbury, that was very tight socially and everything, pulled out from under us. It was destroyed. And it was very difficult as a young person to understand what was going on. Why was this happening? Why would they come in and destroy our neighborhood? And my friends in the West End felt the same way.
Yeah. Jay, thanks so much for that. Jerome, let me respond to Jay's concern about, here we have Jay calling from Roxbury. This is a neighborhood that, there's concerned about. He's talking about having the rug pulled out from under him.
I think he has a good sense about how he feels about things that have been done in the past. And, going forward, we want to make sure that Mayor Walsh has made it a priority that we do things differently than we normally have done. And again, things used to normally be cooked up at City Hall, or decisions were made and then were brought out to these community meetings where you would have a town hall with two mics set up and a board up front, and it was kind of this yes or no, and it was spot zoning and spot development. And Mayor Walsh has come in and he's been very clear, working with the BRA and with the others and with me, that he wants to have a real process where residents are actually having a conversation about what they want for their city. We need to make sure that we are preserving affordable housing, that we're not just putting these huge developments in that are going to gentrify a neighborhood. What is the balance there? So that longtime residents who have been there, their whole lives and just handing house, to their kids and the kids handing it to their kids, that stays in the city of Boston, and that we're not forcing them out to other towns.
And Mark Tracy, listening to Jay in Roxbury, is there a formula that works when it comes to development and gentrification where folks, on the one hand, perhaps we want gentrification, we want development, but we don't want the effect of gentrification that forces longtime residents out.
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all, Anthony, but I think that one of the critical things is to try and mix uses. Mm-hmm. We do not want huge apartment buildings everywhere. We do not want only luxury condos. We do not, we want enough parking spaces, but Lord knows, not too many parking spaces. When we build out a neighborhood, we got to think to ourselves, there are either going to be kids there right away, or there are going to be kids there in 10 or 15 years, and they're going to need parks. So some of the space just needs to be held aside for parks. Even though that won't generate income, it will indirectly generate income because everything around it will become more valuable because of that green space.
Sure.
I think one of the problems with South Boston waterfront, you got to remember that planning process was really done two or three recessions ago when the main objective was just build as much as we can to increase tax revenue, because under 2.5, we only get new tax revenue under new growth. And as a result, there isn't enough mixing of uses. Too much is auto-oriented. And I think we can learn from that. And the mayor is already beginning to turn that around, my sense is. And that, I think, is what we need not only in Roxbury, not only in Southie, but in every neighborhood. Mix things up. That is actually one of the strengths of this city, is that in most communities, there are lots of different things going on, different kinds of houses, businesses, green spaces. And that's what makes for a successful, vibrant urban environment.
All right. Well, let's go to Lee, who's calling from Framingham. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi. So I just wanted to say that there is a pipeline of people coming in from all directions that are that comprise the workforce and the play force, if you will, of Boston. And I have been traveling into the city for work for 20 years, and it has become exponentially difficult to commute in town. And I'm fortunate enough to have parking through my company, but if I didn't, God help me. But I do feel that if they're going to make improvements to Boston and really think about the growth, they have to think about how people are going to get in and out and what that means to the external communities or the ring around Boston.
Lee, it's a great point. Who wants to take that? Yeah, go ahead,
Mark.
I'll
take that one because, Lee, I direct the Regional Planning Agency for Greater Boston. I'm proud to say that Roxbury and Framingham and Dover, the homes of all the callers today, are in that regional planning area. But she is absolutely right. You know, last month I went on a family vacation to the place the Drayson family comes from, which is Amsterdam, which, by the way, is about 450 years older than Boston is. And you'd wake up in the morning in downtown Amsterdam and you would hear birds and you'd hear the bikes. You'd hear an occasional car. But for the most part, there are not cars coming into or out of that downtown area of Amsterdam. They have focused a tremendous amount on the commuting system, on the subways, on the buses, on the trams. We have to find better, more efficient, more effective ways to bring people in and out. If we try and solve the problem just with wider roads and more parking spaces, we will never solve the problem. It will always get out ahead of us. But cities much older than Boston, with much older infrastructure and many more challenges, have figured out the way to do it. And through this planning process, we can too.
Jerome, I want to give the last word to you. We literally have maybe 15 or 20 seconds left. But Mark Drayson talking about Amsterdam, we probably don't have the luxury of another 400 years to sort of set up a system of bicycle routes and everything else that Amsterdam has. But take a crack at this transportation issue challenge.
I think that we have to just look at what happened to us during this, you know, unprecedented winter. And it just shows you about how transportation is so vital to the city of Boston. And you know, I think we need to really focus with Go Boston, you know, 2030, which is our transportation plan, but also on the state level. We need to really look about how we get people in and out of the city. It affects so many people's lives. And we also see it with cars on the seaport. I don't think that when they planned on the seaport, they didn't plan on have it boom so much that the cars were having difficulty getting in and out. So,
well, it's one of the big issues. I want to thank you both for coming in. Jerome Smith, Boston's Chief of Civic Engagement, and Mark Drayson, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Thank you. I'm Anthony Brooks with Doug Tribou. There's a lot more ahead. This is Radio Boston.